Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Case Closed with A.J. Benza is part of the Dark Hollywood Collection in the Reels Files on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Be sure to subscribe for new episodes each Thursday. Then go to Reels.com, check the top of the screen, and enter your zip code to find out how you can watch more chilling cases like this when you watch TV. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com for the dark crime series and specials you'll find only on Reels Channel.
Poltergeist, the hit film full of thrills and chills that spawned two sequels and a 2015 reboot. But the horrors on screen were nothing compared to the shocking real-life events that plagued the cast and crew. With unexplained phenomena terrorizing the set, two near-death experiences, and four lives lost all within 6 years, this tragic trilogy produced one of Hollywood's greatest mysteries, The Curse of Poltergeist.
Sheriff's deputies found the 22-year-old actress lying on the ground outside her West Hollywood home.
When you make one of these horror movies and it has a supernatural storyline, you are knocking on doors that you don't really want answered.
Too many strange things were happening. The body count kept going up.
The reason she died may be related to an illness she suffered during recent Poltergeist filming.
Are all these deaths connected? Could the Poltergeist films really be cursed? Or are these tragedies just a terrible coincidence?
It's been told since ancient times, don't desecrate a grave. The curse is not going away.
Something simply didn't want them to be completing a movie called Poltergeist.
That is freaky.
Mystery? Not for long. Poltergeist premiered in 1982, the sequel 4 years later, and finally Poltergeist 3 was released in 1988. If you include the 2015 reboot, the hit series has grossed over $270 million. But sadly, all that success came with a price. A total of 14 unexplained events, some tragic, some just plain bizarre, have plagued the cast and crew since the first day of shooting, which has led many to believe the franchise is somehow cursed. If you ask me, bad luck is just that. It's bad luck. It happens all the time, especially on a film set. Of course, the true believers, drinking all the Kool-Aid, say there are just too many instances, more than enough to convince even the toughest skeptic. Well, guess what? Today, that tough skeptic is me. My mission? To examine all 14 of these so-called unexplainable phenomena, one by one, to find out if they really can't be explained. Is there really a curse, or is it just one big coincidence? But let's begin with some background. My first question is, what exactly is a poltergeist? Well, turns out it's German for noisy ghost. And its definition, any kind of supernatural being responsible for physical disturbances, such as loud noises or objects being moved or destroyed. Okay, so what has that got to do with Poltergeist the movie?
Mark Victor, co-writer of Poltergeist 1 and 2.
The real mandate for doing Poltergeist was, let's do a suburban ghost story. You have to have scares. It's got to be supernatural, otherworldly.
Leo Quinones, film critic.
The plot of Poltergeist is as basic as it gets. A normal family gets sucked into a super paranormal situation.
Matt Biller, Poltergeist expert.
Everything in their life is going fine until their little girl starts talking to the television set and strange occurrences start to happen.
When you make one of these horror movies and it has a supernatural storyline, you are knocking on doors that you don't really want answered.
Paul Dale Roberts, paranormal investigator.
This being one of the first projects that I ever done. There was no fear in my mind about doing something in the supernatural.
When you're making a movie about the paranormal, it's best to have some paranormal experts on the set to make sure that proper cleansings and respect is given to occult items at the movie set. Because if not, you're going to have problems.
Okay, before I jump down this rabbit hole, I need to check for one vital piece of criterion. All curses have an origin story. They're responses or reactions to some kind of transgression or desecration. It can be accidental or it can be intentional. Doesn't matter. But there needs to be some kind of inciting incident to create a curse. So if there's a poltergeist curse, what could the filmmakers possibly have done to start it?
I consider Jo Beth Williams to be the hero of the movie. She plays the mother. She holds this whole house together.
Jo Beth Williams, as Diane Freeling, was in one of the most memorable scenes in Poltergeist, the swimming pool, the mud, and the skeletons.
If you were to look for a star to the Poltergeist curse, you could probably look at the dug-up pool scene where Diane falls into the swimming pool. And at that point, skeletons from a long buried underneath tomb launch through the ground and start to attack her.
Now, during filming, Jo Beth Williams was not aware that there were real skeletons. She thought there were plastic props. The studio said, nope, plastic skeletons are going to cost too much.
The history of the skeletons is they originated in India and were donated to a local college for medical research. The special effects department bought them cheap and, without too many people knowing, inserted them right into the film.
It's been told since ancient times, don't desecrate a grave. Don't disturb human remains. When you use real human skeletons, that angers the spirits. You bring a curse upon yourself.
Kathleen O'Rourke, Heather's mother.
They brought him out, showed Heather these were real skeletons. She was touching them and kind of making a game of it and playing.
Once the actors found this out and it spread around the crew, there was started to be a sense of unease on the set. Many people who were fairly religious or spiritual believed that this didn't portend anything good for the remainder of the shoot.
And that's where many people believe the curse of Poltergeist started.
So you got a 7-year-old girl on set playing with real bones that were robbed from an ancient burial ground and transported across an ocean where they sold for pennies on the dollar to a Hollywood film crew. Yeah, I'd say that qualifies as a desecration. Sounds curse-worthy to me. Now I'm ready to take on the first 4 examples of unexplained phenomena.
Well, they started to experience a few strange things. Jo Beth Williams would go home after her days of shooting and find the pictures on her wall were crooked, and at first she didn't think much of it, so she would straighten them, only to come home the next day after filming to find that they were crooked again. Dominic Dunn would also come home to find books on her shelf that had no business being on the floor or on a table, and she would replace those books, and of course, what would happen the next day? They'd be right back to where they were. Once again, no one in the house.
What that indicates when objects are moving around is that the entities that are part of that curse are very angry. So they're letting the people on the movie set know that they're there, they're angry, and the curse is not going away.
Oliver Robbins had an incredibly disturbing occurrence on the set of Poltergeist. He has a scene with an animatronic doll, the one that's in his room.
The clown comes out from under his bed and wraps its arms around him and starts to strangle and pull him under the bed. Well, during a bizarre take, the clown arms were no longer under the control of the special effects department, and they started to actually strangle Oliver Robbins. And his breathing became labored, and everybody's going, wow, great acting, good job.
But they're thinking this kid's a method actor, but Steven Spielberg was on the set. He said, wait a minute, something's wrong. He's turning a different color, and he jumped in and he ripped the doll off and possibly saved Oliver's life.
Well, at the time, a lot of these special effects were brand new, and so it could have been a motor malfunction. The clown was controlled by tons of cables, pulleys, and hydraulics. There's a lot of things that can go wrong when you're dealing with physics like that, or something simply didn't want them to be completing a movie called Poltergeist.
When I hear what happened to Oliver and all these crazy things that happened on that movie set, it seems like someone inexperienced with the paranormal somehow enticed the spirits to get angry.
I was assigned the novelization of Poltergeist, and I went to Steven's office at MGM every night for a month and wrote it. The strangest night of my writing assignment, it wasn't raining, but it was dark and overcast, and I was writing for a long time that day, so I was pretty drained physically and emotionally, and I was writing a particularly scary part of the novel. I'd been giving my pages to Marcy, who was typing up what I was writing, and just as I was writing the lines, thunder and lightning ripped the sky. There was this huge clash of thunder and lightning. It must have hit the building. All the lights in the building went out. The facing on the air conditioner on the other side of the room blew off. The air conditioner flew across the room. There was a long moment of darkness. And then suddenly, all the video games in the room began playing themselves.
They desecrated a grave. They opened up a portal and brought a curse upon the actors and the actresses and themselves. And because of that, after the first movie, the entities were not going away.
Sheriff's deputies said they found the 22-year-old actress lying on the ground outside her West Hollywood home.
Poltergeist is one of the most successful horror franchises in the history of Hollywood. But since the beginning, the cast and crew were plagued by a series of bizarre and tragic events. Is there a supernatural connection, or is it all just one big terrible coincidence? So what do we know so far? Well, if there is a curse, it all started when the props department decided to bring real human skeleton bones to the set. We also heard about the first four instances of unexplained phenomenon. So, where do they fall? Curse or coincidence? The crooked pictures on the walls of Joe Beth Williams' home, I've seen that happen a million times. It's gravity. It's the house settling. That's a coincidence. Now, the books falling out of Dominique Dunn's shelf, once or twice you could explain, maybe. But multiple times? That's just freaky. That's a curse. This next one's interesting. Oliver Robbins almost getting strangled at the hands of a mechanical clown. I can see how this might seem like a curse, but I've also been on enough film sets to know that when special effects are involved, whatever can go wrong usually does. That's a coincidence. Finally, the power surge at Steven Spielberg's office. You know, if it's just one or two times the lights go on and off, that's one thing. But for the power to go out at the precise moment James Caan is typing thunder and lightning, I just can't ignore the timing of that. I gotta go with curse. So, we are all tied at 2-2, and the stakes are about to go way up.
Sheriff's deputies said they found the 22-year-old actress lying on the ground outside her West Hollywood home.
Harold Johnston, L.A. County Sheriff Detective, retired.
Obviously, there was the Dominique Dunn tragedy.
Dominique Dunn, perfect as Lana, the teenager, typical, rebellious, but ultimately she did love her family more than anything.
A few months after shooting on Poltergeist wrapped, Dominique Dunn was cast in a new miniseries for NBC called V, about aliens coming to Earth. And she was rehearsing with another actor friend of hers at her home when her ex-boyfriend John Sweeney made a visit.
John Sweeney was the head chef at May Maison Restaurant. 6'1". Heavily built, about 200 pounds. He's more like a linebacker in football. They had been separated for 30 days. His thinking was that they were going to get back together, but he had received a letter from her that sounded like they were not going to get back together. So he made a phone call. She told him, well, she had thought it over, and she did not want to be with him any longer. He became angry. He walked 2 miles to her house and knocked on the front door. He knew that she was inside with David Packer, working on a script for the television series V. And he asked if he could come in and talk to her. She said, no, I'll come out. So she came out on the front porch.
David Packer began to hear something that sounded like an argument going on.
And she told him that she was afraid of him. She didn't want to live with him anymore. At that point, he became angry and started choking her. To choke someone, you have to be up close and personal, and you know what's going on right in front of your eyes. He had to know what he was doing.
They were fighting quite loudly. The whole neighborhood could hear it.
Mr. Packer said that the reason he did not go out to help, he was afraid that Mr. Sweeney was a lot larger than him and didn't think he would have much of a chance against him. He called a friend of his, and the friend did not answer, but he left it on an answering machine that if I get killed tonight, John Sweeney did it. Mr. Sweeney dragged her next door for about 30 yards as he was choking her. Mr. Packer then called the Los Angeles Police Department. The Los Angeles police officer says, well, this is not our jurisdiction. If you're any kind of a man, you would go out and help her. LAPD then hung up.
Kenneth Johnson, writer and director of V.
He called the police once or twice or maybe three times. It's stunning to think about, and it didn't make sense.
He then ran from the residence. Mr. Packer went to the back fence of Miss Dunn's residence, looked over the wall, and saw John Sweeney beside Miss Dunn, just sitting there holding her head. John Sweeney told David Packer to call the sheriff's department that he had just seriously injured his girlfriend.
By the time the police arrived, she was already unconscious and never regained consciousness.
He was taken to West Hollywood Station, and we took him in an interview room. He was nervous, but didn't ask that many questions about her. He was more worried about what was going to happen to him. He just said that he had lost it and did not recall what happened.
It was big news. It was all over the newspaper.
We just told Heather, you know, that something bad had happened. It hit her really hard, but she accepted it as it was. It was just sad to her.
Mr. Dunn and Miss Dunn took it quite hard, as you would expect from two parents who loved their daughter.
The murder of Dominique Dunn is undoubtedly one of the greatest tragedies in the history of Hollywood. But does it point to a curse? Well, it was certainly a perfect storm of terrible luck. I mean, her boyfriend attacks her outside so loudly the entire neighborhood can hear, but nobody comes to help. Her co-star, David Packer, is watching the whole thing but freezes. And finally, when Packer does call the cops, they hang up on him. Obviously, Dominique Dunn had no business dying that day, but is there a supernatural connection to Poltergeist? Could the curse have somehow pushed her boyfriend, John Sweeney, to commit murder? Seems like a reach. I mean, for me to even entertain that notion, I need more info on Sweeney.
At the trial of John Sweeney, the prosecution found an ex-girlfriend who had testimony of past abuse and violence.
Lillian Pierce, who had been Mr. Sweeney's girlfriend for a period of time, told us that Mr. Sweeney had struck her and choked her numerous times, put her in the hospital twice. He had broken her nose, and he had also fractured an eardrum. And unfortunately, the judge in the case did not allow that information to be presented to the jury. The judge said it would prejudice the jury about Mr. Sweeney.
I was astonished to hear some of the goings-on and some of the things that were not allowed to be said and that the jury was not aware of.
I don't know the reason for that. I don't know his thinking. The judge, throughout the whole thing, kept wanting to bring the charges down, kept wanting to mention manslaughter to the jury a number of times, and I felt justice was not going to be done. He was more on the side of Mr. Sweeney than he was on the victim, Dominique Dunn.
Dominique's mother, Ellen, spoke with determination.
And I therefore beg you, Judge Katz, to give the maximum possible sentence to John Sweeney, which is little enough for what he has done.
Although he's sentenced to 6.5 years, because of time already served and other factors, Sweeney could be free in as little as 2.5 years.
The trial basically resulted in a guilty verdict of manslaughter for John Sweeney, which carries a far more reduced prison sentence than first-degree murder.
You choke your young girlfriend to death and get 2.5 years in prison does not seem fair to me. It is a travesty.
I heard afterwards that many of the jurors said that had they known more than they were told, the verdict would have been very different.
Outside the courthouse, demonstrators chanted, "Don't let Sweeney get away with murder."
Well, actually, there was quite a bit of outcry. Judge Katz got transferred out of Superior Court down to Juvenile Court in a short period of time after that trial, because everyone knew that that had been a farce.
He was clearly a loose cannon that was very dangerous. I just hope nobody else ends up suffering the same fate that Dominique did, because he's back on the street.
When people talk about the Poltergeist curse, I'm not sure there is a curse, but if there is, why, Miss Dunn, unfortunately, was the first one to be cursed with that.
Did the curse of Poltergeist take out Dominique Dunn? I do believe she was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and she was in the wrong relationship. To say that the Poltergeist curse took her life is a bit of a stretch, but it does fit under the whole umbrella of uncertainty about people close to this movie franchise.
The trial was a travesty, and the death was a tragedy. On the surface, this case is definitely cursed material. But the problem is, dying at the hands of an abusive boyfriend isn't that unusual. And Dominique Dunn's murder isn't directly connected to Poltergeist. Now, if she was rehearsing for one of the sequels instead of the V miniseries, then I'd say definitely cursed. But, you know, I'm sorry. To me, this is just a terrible, terrible coincidence. And sadly, her death is only the beginning.
There was no doubt that the Poltergeist body count kept going up.
Did you know you can stream Reels Dark Hollywood programs like this on Roku, Fire TV, and Amazon channels? Well, you can. Just download the Reels app to subscribe. Or check out Reels on Tubi, Samsung TV Plus, Vizio, and Zumo. Case Closed with AJ Benza comes from the Dark Hollywood fans at Reels channel. To find Reels in your area, go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen, enter your zip code, and begin enjoying great TV.
Poltergeist is one of the most popular horror franchises in the history of Hollywood. But from day one, the cast and crew were plagued by a series of strange and terrible events. Is there a supernatural connection, or was it all just a coincidence? So far, I've explored 5 of the unexplained phenomena, and coincidence is leading 3-2. But with the death of Dominique Dunn, we've only scratched the surface of tragedy surrounding the Poltergeist productions. In 1983, filming began on the sequel, and the body count was about to go up.
I was not exactly bracing myself for something to occur on the second film, but half looking for something to occur.
I don't remember anybody on the crew having hesitation about it. They're not going to come up to the producer and say, "I'm a little worried about doing this movie."
We're back.
The plot of Poltergeist 2. Let's get out of the house, let's go to Diane's mom's house, and kind of see what happens and get back to normalcy. On the first day of shooting of Poltergeist 2, they go back and look at what they call dailies, that footage that was shot on that day. And lo and behold, there was no footage on the negative. That is freaky.
It was just odd. I mean, we had a veteran cinematographer, and all the footage came out black. The main malfunction that I remember is when we were shooting the skeletal remains. We had used some real skulls that were on the set.
They use real skeletons again. Talk about knocking on the door of fate one more time. Use your noggin. How about a prop skeleton? Jeez.
The idea of using human skeletons and that that would cause a curse never entered my mind. But I remember working with Craig T. Nelson on the set, and he kept saying he just didn't feel right about what was going on.
When Will Sampson, who plays Taylor, the Indian spirit man, comes onto the set, he felt something terribly wrong and it had to be stopped.
He was always talking to Heather and he had his braids and he was just an Indian and that's kind of how Heather related to him. And he'd always come in touch and talk to Heather.
Will Sampson said that because we had used some real skulls that they had bought for the set design, he related the black footage, the non-footage, was caused by that event.
Will Sampson was actually an Indian shaman of many different tribes, and he arranged to perform a Native American exorcism.
We joked about the idea of having to do an exorcism on the day we lost the footage because of the skeleton. On the other hand, Will Sampson, who brought it up and volunteered to do it, wasn't joking around.
He told the studio security, leave the door to the soundstage open. I'll come in the middle of the night and I'll perform it and everything should be fine.
He actually went down there and cleansed everything down in that set before they were allowed to go back down again.
And the next day, all the fears were alleviated. He really did an amazing thing.
The cast and the crew and everyone involved reported a feeling of ease on the set, and he pretty much had cleansed it of whatever was bothering it for the time.
When Will Sampson did a cleansing on the movie set, I think he was probably confident with his cleansing. But when you're dealing with a curse, you're dealing with something very, very powerful. And this curse was powerful. So I think somehow it would affect his blessing and affected him in a very negative way.
Will was fine early on in the film. And then later in the shoot, he started taking oxygen. All of a sudden, Will was suffering from emphysema. I would have never known that at the beginning of the shoot because it wasn't something that was on the radar initially. But you could tell that he had some bad days. But I wasn't thinking about him in terms of that he was going to pass away.
He died from complications after major surgery, what was supposed to be routine surgery. And he was only 52 when he passed away.
When Will Sampson passed away 1 year later after he did his cleansing, I think it's not a coincidence. I do believe it's connected to the curse.
Craig T. Nelson decided to journey out to where Will Sampson is buried, and the cicadas were out, and they were chattering loudly. You couldn't hear a thing. They were so loud. And Craig stands in front of Will's grave, and he goes, Will, it's Craig. And every single cicada instantly was silent. And Craig looked around like somebody was playing a joke on him because he couldn't believe what had just happened. And Craig T. Nelson was a skeptic of the poltergeist curse, but he did say that was one of the first times where he felt something there.
Craig T. Nelson said, and I quote, I am convinced Will Sampson's presence on the film saved us from tragedy. Not only does he play a native shaman in the film, he's a native shaman himself. And I believe it cost him dearly in terms of his own personal health to see us safely through. Wow.
I can't believe they use real human bones again for the sequel. Anyhow, back to this. Now, as for the blank film on the first day of shooting, that's just operator error. First day of shooting is usually when this sort of thing happens. People are getting used to rented equipment. It's a straight up coincidence. The death of Will Sampson, this one's a slam dunk. If that was a shaman who performed an exorcism on set and then later died during a routine surgery, he fought the curse and sadly, the curse won. And finally, the cicadas suddenly going quiet at Sampson's grave. Well, I wasn't there, but Craig T. Nelson sounds like a reasonable guy, and the cicadas clearly convinced him, so it says curse all over it. All right, it's all tied up at 4, but the body count is already at 2 and rising.
There were deaths coming out of the first film. There were deaths coming out of the second film.
We're offered Poltergeist 3 to write and produce. As far as I was concerned, two of those was enough.
I had reservations when I was offered Poltergeist 3. There's always trepidation when you're going to do something about the occult.
Poltergeist 3 finds Carol Ann Freeling being sent to live with her aunt and uncle in a Chicago skyscraper in order to just escape the terror that's followed the family for so long.
If people were whispering about the curse, it wasn't to me, because I think people didn't want to get me upset. I had a lot to do on that film. Probably the first real indication was when we were doing a scene in a parking garage, and we had an explosion set that was going to create a 30-foot fireball that was going to come rolling down this ramp into camera. The explosion goes off. I count to seven. I got a walkie-talkie. I say, "Put the fire out." Nothing happens. Then there's black smoke starts pouring out of every ventilation shaft. And then the doors from the garage fly open and the firemen come running out. And they said, "That explosion was way bigger than we thought it was going to be. It scared the out of us." The garage was destroyed. All the cars in the garage were destroyed. It was like a couple of $1 million worth of damage, I think. We were all grateful that no one got hurt. It was a really terrifying experience. Another thing that went wrong while we were shooting, for the puddle sequence where Heather steps into the puddle and hands come out of the puddle and grab her and pull her down into the water, we had built a 5,000-gallon tank with windows with 8-inch thick glass. So we're shooting when suddenly our special effects operator says, "I want everybody out of the studio right now." "What's going on? What's going on?" He said, "The glass was cracking from the inside." He said, "If those things go, it'll kill people." So we had to abandon the set. We didn't use the tank again. Everything that happened was pretty haunting.
Poltergeist even got to Zelda Rubinstein, who plays Tangina. She was in a Poltergeist 3 photo shoot, and in the middle of the shoot, she felt a jolt go through her, and she lurched forward. They asked if she was okay. She said, "I'm going to be fine."
While she was doing it, Barry Bernardi, the producer, gets a call that Zelda's mother had died. We just packed Zelda off and got her to the airport. The next day, the proofs from the photographs from the shoot come back. And right in the middle of this session, which was exactly the time that Zelda's mother had died, there is a frame in the middle of this proof sheet that is completely blown out. It's almost like there's an entity that entered the frame. We actually sent the negatives to Kodak to ask them what they thought, and they said they couldn't explain it. It freaked me out.
All right, so a 30-foot fireball destroys a garage. When you deal with pyrotechnics on a film set, stuff like that's going to happen. Nobody died, so coincidence. Same thing with the water tank that almost broke. Coincidence. Now, the creepy photo of Zelda Rubinstein, that's another story. It snapped at the exact moment Zelda's mother died on the other side of the country, and the experts at Kodak had no explanation. Well, I don't either. Curse. Which means coincidence is now leading 6-5, and the Poltergeist 3 death count hasn't yet begun.
And now...
I don't think that while I was making the film, I thought about the curse a lot, because I didn't really want to think about it. But nobody's ever been able to explain the time when the engineer who ran the John Hancock building was with us. We were shooting a scene one night. He sat down in a chair and fell asleep. When we were ready to move out of that set and move on, somebody went over to wake him up, and he was dead. It's the only time in my career that I've ever had anybody die on the set.
The Poltergeist franchise has made more than $270 million worldwide, but that success came with a heavy price. The cast and crew have long been plagued with a series of bizarre and tragic events. Is there a supernatural connection, or is it all just a coincidence? After digging into 11 of the unexplained phenomena, coincidence was leading 6-5. But then I heard about the engineer on the set of Poltergeist 3. He fell asleep in his chair, and when one of the crew went to wake him, it turned out the guy was dead. Now, as creepy as his death must have been to everybody who was there, he died of natural causes, not supernatural. It was just his time to go. Nothing more, nothing less. Coincidence. The curse is now losing 7-5, but there's still at least one more cast member left to die.
One of the more unusual curse stories involving Poltergeist was with actor Richard Lawson, who played Ryan, the paranormal investigator in the first movie. He was boarding a U.S. Airways plane out of LaGuardia, and he was recognized by airline personnel as being from Poltergeist, and so they moved him from coach to first class.
And he got on this plane, and inside he said, "I shouldn't be on this plane. Something's going to go wrong." And something did go wrong.
As Richard's plane took off, there were malfunctions right away, and the plane crashed on takeoff.
It was at LaGuardia Sunday night that a Cleveland-bound jetliner crashed in a snowstorm, killing 27 of the 51 people aboard.
Richard Lawson survived the crash.
I was not about to die right now like this.
But the person who was sitting in his seat in coach that he was supposed to have if he was not recognized from Poltergeist, they died in the crash.
He lived. Now, is that a Poltergeist blessing or is it a Poltergeist curse?
It was a power greater than myself that helped me free myself from whatever it was that bound me.
The odds of being in a plane crash in the United States are roughly 1 in 5 million. The odds of dying in one are the same as being struck by lightning 7 times. And sure, Richard Lawson didn't die. In fact, he only survived because he switched seats after being recognized from Poltergeist. But still, his plane went down, and that's just too rare to ignore. That has curse all over it. Coincidence is still in the lead, 7-6, which brings me to the final Poltergeist tragedy.
Heather O'Rourke was the Poltergeist franchise. From 1, 2, and 3, she drove people to the theater in droves. Heather O'Rourke being cast as Carol Ann is an example of perfect casting. She embodies everything a little kid should be.
Her sister Tammy was dancing and singing on Pennies from Heaven. And I was able to bring Heather to the set because I had no one to take care of her at home. Steven Spielberg came up to us and talked to her and said, "Can you read?" She said, "Yeah, I can read." He made her scream and scream and scream. And she said, started to cry and said, "I can't do anymore." And that was it. He fell in love with her, he told me. And then she was hired.
They're here.
The original line, "They're here," that was the identifying signature of the entire film, more than a ghost, more than anything else.
It's just a line that she said, "They're here, they're here, they're here," however Stephen wanted her to do it.
Poltergeist 3 had two major names attached to it, Tom Skerritt and Nancy Allen, but the star is Heather O'Rourke, and this was her movie.
Why? What chubby little wrists you got.
Heather was absolutely unbelievable. She was a 35-year-old, 11-year-old. I mean, she was just so sophisticated.
Does that hurt anywhere, Heather?
No.
She was the ultimate professional and the sweetest. She was so unaffected by her fame.
In Poltergeist 3, you could tell that there was something definitely wrong with the appearance of Heather O'Rourke. Her facial features had drastically changed. Her cheeks were puffing out. Her neck was a little more swollen. Something was wrong.
Heather was ill from the beginning. We had her going to doctors, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her.
Poltergeist is one of the most enduring horror franchises in the history of Hollywood. But since the beginning, the cast and crew were plagued by a series of strange and terrible events. Is there a supernatural connection, or is it all just a coincidence? Now we're examining the final Poltergeist tragedy, the one that brought the curse out of the shadows and into the mainstream media. During the filming of Poltergeist 3, 12-year-old Heather O'Rourke was battling a mysterious illness.
There's always days in your life that you'll never forget exactly where you were and exactly what was happening. I will never forget the day that I found out that Heather died. I was in Chicago. We were getting prepared to mount the shooting of the end of the film. And David Wardlow had set up a conference call, it was Heather's agent, and says, I have some really bad news for you guys. Heather passed away this morning.
I remember she gotten up and she was real excited about school. I said, you didn't eat yesterday. You need to eat something before you go to school. So I made her some toast and she touched my hand and her fingers were blue and they were cold. And I said she had to eat a piece of toast and she couldn't swallow. So I called 911 and as we walked out, she said, Mom, I love you. I'm sorry because she had thrown up. And the paramedics told me, don't turn around. And they did CPR on her. And the next thing I knew, someone said to me, what's your religion preference? And I kind of looked at them, well, what are you talking about? They said, didn't you know they did CPR on her? And I said, well, you need a lifeline or the children's hospital then. And I said, I hear they're the best. So that's what they did. And then I lost her.
It was devastating. I love this little girl.
Tonight there's a new explanation of the sudden death of Heather O'Rourke. Earlier it was said the 12-year-old star of the Poltergeist films died of flu complications. But now a San Diego hospital says she died during surgery for an intestinal infection. Her manager says the reason she died may be related to an illness she suffered during recent Poltergeist filming.
What I did find out was there was an x-ray that had been done when she was first diagnosed, and that was misread. She had been taking cortisone. The intestine had been growing more than her body would accept. It started to leak. And so she died of septic shocks because all of the septic had gone into all of her organs.
She was the second star of the original Poltergeist to die tragically. Dominique Dunn, who played her older sister, was murdered by her boyfriend back in 1982.
When you're dealing with one death after another death, it's not a coincidence. There's something more to it, and I believe it's that curse. When Heather O'Rourke died, I believe there was a connection to the curse, because when you have a curse, if you have some kind of medical ailment, things are going to become worse.
The tabloids were pursuing me because they wanted to go after the curse of Poltergeist. And in the immediate moment, there was no way I wanted to talk about any of that. I didn't want to be part of it. I remember standing there at the graveside, holding the casket, and looking up at all the paparazzi trying to climb over the fences on balconies and high-rises that surround that cemetery in Westwood, and shooting, popping off pictures, and I just hated them.
In Hollywood, there's a saying, money is the root of all evil, and if there's money to be made, Hollywood's going to go after it.
After the funeral, we had a film with 17 pages left to shoot. I just didn't want it to go on. We didn't want to release a film with a dead 12-year-old in it. But the powers that be at MGM, the people that control the buck, said, if you guys don't finish it, we'll get somebody else to finish it. So we all kind of huddled together and said, okay, let's just finish it. I gotta say, shooting that end scene with a double of Heather was difficult. To this day, I'm upset that we ever released Poltergeist 3.
When they went to release it, I went to the theater, and I think the hard thing for me was somebody said, oh, look how fat that girl is. It was the hardest thing for me not to go down and hit him. Because I thought, that's my baby you're talking about, and she's passed away.
It wasn't fair. It was wrong.
You know, we talk about the supernatural, that somebody maybe has a premonition. Well, right before Christmas, she was trying to tell me how to use her new camera and video. And I said, what for, Heather? Well, in case I'm not here someday. And, you know, to me, still in the back of mind, that bothers me.
Hey, Heather O'Rourke was the fourth person directly connected to Poltergeist to die under incredibly strange circumstances. And she wasn't just a cast member. She was the face of the franchise. But of course, what makes her death so unbelievably tragic was that she was only 12 years old, and she didn't need to die. She was misdiagnosed because of a misread X-ray. And when you consider all of that, along with the fact that it happened during production of Poltergeist 3, then my decision is obvious. Curse. So, we are dead even at 7. Or are we? Heather's passing means two of the original 5 family members from the first Poltergeist are dead, Heather and Dominique Dunn. 2 out of 5, that's 40%. If that's not a curse, I don't know what is. Which means I gotta revisit the murder of Dominique Dunn. Earlier I said it was a coincidence. But remember, I was this close to going with curse because otherwise it seemed like such a perfect storm of bad luck. But now that I'm weighing her death alongside Heather's, I have no choice but to move Dominique Dunn to the curse side. Final score, curse 8, coincidence 6. The Poltergeist curse is real. Hard to believe, but this tough skeptic went soft. I'm AJ Benza, and I'm a believer. This case is closed.
Case Closed with AJ Benza comes from the Dark Hollywood Collection at Reels Channel. To get more like this when you watch TV, go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen and enter your zip code to find us on your system. You'll also find extras from the TV version of Case Closed with AJ Benza, including full episodes, witness interviews, and crime scene photos you'll get only on Reels Channel. Find Case Closed with AJ Benza and its companions on Roku and Fire TV, too.